Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome everybody to the Writer's Lounge. This is show number 7 and welcome to November 14th, 2011. I'm your host, Tom Riedel, along with my co-host here, Lou Riedel. And before we get into the subject matter of today's program, let me tell you a little bit about what we are and where we're located on the internet. The Writer's Lounge blog is located at tomriedel.com/blog. That's TOMRIDDELL.com. And of course, if you go to the Blog Talk Radio site, you'll find a link there for Facebook. So if you'd like to join us on Facebook, you can get us there also. And also, of course, we have email. That's TWL11@yahoo.com. We'd always appreciate a nice email from you folks out there. Our shows are very popular these days, and we love reading your emails. In that regard, we are doing a show tonight with Brandon Ford. He wrote Decayed Etchings, and Brandon is from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He'll be with us shortly. We actually did a pre-recorded interview with him, I believe, back in August, and I will be interviewing him. My wife was unable to attend that interview since it was past her bedtime, which was like around 11:30 at night. So we'll get to that interview shortly, and I think you're really going to enjoy Brandon Ford. It's sort of an extension of Halloween. Last week, of course, or the last show, of course, we had a Halloween-based theme of a very scary story by C.K. Webb and D.J. Weaver, and we are hoping that they're doing really well with their book, and we once again enjoyed reading that. As far as coming up here in the future, we have Future Desk coming to our show, and we have a surprise. We're going to be adding more shows. So from now on, well, at least from November 28th all the way through, I believe, January, we will be adding a show every week, and here's the lineup. On November 28th, we have Chantal Boudreau. On December 12th, we get away from the fiction a little bit and dive into Nail Your Novel with Roz Morris. She'll teach us the writing skills. That's on December 12th, and I forgot to mention already, a week before that, on December 5th, we will be bringing on Neil Tortorella. I hope I pronounced his name right, and he wrote a book called Starting Your Career as a Freelance Web Designer, and I have a lot of interest in that since I will be starting a business here at the first of the year, and I will be announcing something very special to all you authors out there in regards to that as we go along with our shows in the future. On December 26th, we'll have J.T. Barber on with Reflections of a Whisper that was motivated by James Brown. She'll be on December 26th. That will end the year before we get into the new year, and I'll save the rest of the lineup until later on in December, and we will announce that as we go along here. Okay, I think, Lou, we're ready for our first segment, which is always Writer's Topics. And what do you got for us today?
Okay, today I looked at a book called The Secret to Freeing Your Creative Mind, Thinking Right by Kelly L. Stone. And I thought this is kind of interesting, just thinking about the writers that I know. She talks about characteristics of creative people and see if you're a writer, if you can see yourself in this. They talk about having a wide range of interests. Many, many writers, it's not unusual for them to pursue painting, knitting, beading, and other hobbies that produce a visible, tangible result. They combine facts and ideas in unique ways. They look at things out of the ordinary way and take a leap into the extraordinary. They have a high tolerance for frustration. Well, some of them.
Why did you look at me when you said that?
High tolerance for frustration, chaos, and complexity. They can tackle any mess day in and day out until the absolute moment strikes, the aha moment. They're patient while waiting for that eureka moment. They expect to receive hunches and intuitive thoughts, and they act on those hunches and intuitive thoughts even if they don't understand them. And I think that's something that I've come across too, is a lot of writers are very intuitive. They tend to look at the world a little differently than people who are not writers.
I think they focused a lot on the details, like mm-hmm. an artist might focus on a section of a painting or such, that they really dive into the little details, like a leaf or mm-hmm. whatnot, a sunset. They're not so much to dismiss those kind of things as they would be to actually pay more attention to those things. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about that before on some of the previous shows that we've done.
Yep. And they're also self-starters. Creative people do not need an external source to motivate them to work on their ideas. They can put wheels on ideas. They get excited about their musings, and they go to work to bring their ideas to fruition. And the other part of the book that I found really interesting was using music for creativity. A lot of writers I know like to listen to music. I'm one of them. For writers, it can be an aid for creativity and an inspiration for writing. They use music in many ways to inspire and guide their writing sessions, even taking ideas from individual lyrics or writing a scene to the beat of a certain waltz. Certain styles of music, such as Baroque, even have been documented to stimulate creativity by helping the brain shift into alpha brainwave mode. And I just have a little quotation here by Zoe Archer, who wrote Love in a Bottle and other novels. She says, "I listen to movie soundtracks because they don't have lyrics and they're emotionally evocative. Music helps guide the meditation process that is involved in tapping into your imagination and the creative process. It puts things in a more cinematic way." I know I like to listen to music when I'm writing.
And I know that the author that's coming up would be Nail Your Novel in December, and we keep saying coming up because we actually did a pre-recorded interview with Roz Morris, who uses music to stimulate mm-hmm. her mind.
Yes,
I think
does.
It's sort of like a key. It kind of brushes away all the everyday things that we encounter in our everyday lives and enables us to kind of seep into that imaginative world that writers need to sort of spark their work ahead.
And it can act as a focus too.
Yeah. It's interesting that we're talking about this because I know, and I've actually, and we will get into this discussion later on in future shows, but I know of a few people who are like that, where they tend to appreciate the little things in life, and they really enjoy music, and it opens them up, and I've run into those kind of people around quite a bit. What I'd like to talk about, and this is sort of a preface to what I'm going to play here, it's a clip from Stephen King, and since we're having Brandon Ford on with the extension of Halloween, I couldn't think of anybody better to bring on the show, well, at least in audio clip form, would be Stephen King. And he wrote back in December, well, actually in 2008, he wrote a book called Just After Sunset. And in that book, he of course had several short stories. Brandon has 18 in his book. And I know during our interview, I think I mentioned, and you'll hear it shortly, about him being sort of on the par with Stephen King, and I really believe he is. And I found it interesting, Stephen's take on the short story, and how do we decide on whether to write a short story or a novel? I think that comes up a lot with us writers in trying to decide what we're going to do when we sit down to write our first story. And he had mentioned in this clip that you'll hear about how sometimes an idea for a short story actually balloons into a novel. So like you said, Lou, when you're mentioning music, it opens up your mind and kind of pushes you forward to a point where it sometimes pushes you a lot more forward than you really wanted to go, and it moves you into novel mode instead of short story mode. But I found it very interesting, and also in how he talked about how the short story seems to be, well, he didn't really mention this, but I do know that a lot of writers tend to kind of focus more on getting a novel done instead of a short story. And the quagmire, there's a quagmire out there that I think a lot of people, especially new writers, are stuck in. Me, myself, I've written a memoir, which is probably thicker than a phone book, so that doesn't really apply to me. And I'm writing a novel that's going to be close to 100,000 words when it's done. So those things are important when you're sitting down to try to decide what you're going to do. And what did you have to say, Lou?
Well, I do both. I find that when I get a little bit stuck on one of the novels I'm working on, I go back to a book of short stories that I'm writing. Because it helps, it gives me a break, it gives me a different perspective, it allows me to switch back and forth between the two, and I think it helps my personal creative writing process.
Yes, and like I say, it doesn't have to be a novel. You can turn it into one later on, but it doesn't hurt to start small and then work big. So here's Stephen King. Once again, this is done from an interview on YouTube from Borders Books. And this is back in December of 2008. And after this interview, we'll be back with Brandon Ford and the Cade Etchings.
Well, we're sitting here with Stephen King. Author of way too many books for me to list right now, but most recently of Just After Sunset, which is a collection of short stories and a return to form for you on the short story front. But thank you so much for sitting out with Borders today.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah. So Just After Sunset, you write an introduction in the book which talks about the fact that short stories are sort of an art form that not everybody and not a lot of writers tackle anymore, and that you mentioned is something that you can sort of lose your touch on a little bit. Is that true?
I think it is true. Of course, number one, I wouldn't have written it if I didn't think it was true. But number two, it's the kind of thing where I think a lot of writers who sell a fair number of copies and can support themselves with their writing, and we're very fortunate to be able to do that, have a tendency to think of the novel. And once you get your mind set on the novel, it's very easy to lose whatever trick it is that involves writing the short story. There's a metaphor in the introduction where I said that I could imagine craftsman from the Middle Ages forgetting how to make Toledo steel and just looking sort of sadly at a botched job and saying, I really used to remember how to make this stuff. And I think, too, that the novel is a quagmire that a lot of younger writers stumble into before they're ready to go there. So that there was a piece in maybe PW or one of the magazines, one of the magazines associated with writing and publishing a couple of weeks ago, where their columnist said there is some, oh, I know, it was in the Boston Globe where this lady said, enumerated a number of great short story writers who have not written any short stories for a while, and you ask them that why, and the same reason is given time after time. Well, I'm writing a novel, and so the short story production dries up. Now, for me, I started with short stories when I was 18, sold my first one when I was about 20, and produced pretty much nothing. But, well, I wrote a couple of novels, but they were not accepted, and a lot of them were so bad that I didn't even bother to revise them. But the short stories were making money, and I got very comfortable with that format, and I never wanted to leave it completely behind.
Is a short story, like you hear some people who write short stories talk about the fact that in their mind they have these massive novels written about these characters, but really what you see on the page is just a sliver of a story that's in their brain that they could tell, they could write a novel about it in most cases.
Yeah,
true?
It is true, and what happens to me a lot of times is I will start out saying this would be a terrific short story idea, and it balloons and becomes a novel. Misery started as a short story. And Gerald's Game started as a short story. Those were things that I thought would be small and grew to a size where they would be a novel. But on the other hand, there's a story in, there are three stories in Just After Sunset that are fairly long. They're in the 22 to 25,000 word length, which would make them novellas. There's one called A Very Tight Place. There's another one called The Gingerbread Girl that was done in Esquire.
Mm-hmm.
And there is Anne, which has not been published before. And, in fact, Anne was submitted to The New Yorker. And I had a sense that they thought about the story very seriously and sort of wanted it for The New Yorker. But finally what they came back with was, this is just too long for the market. So that can present a problem. There really is that length of 22 to 25,000 words is kind of a twilight zone for writers. It's too short to be a novel, but it's too long to be a short story. And the real short stories that very talented short story writers like Raymond Carver are able to write, there's almost an art of miniaturization that's involved. It's a difficult craft. It's a very demanding craft.
Do you try to take your, like, N, which was 50, 60, I don't know how many pages, but it's a novella, to your point. Did you try to think about taking that and making it even smaller?
No, N is just the right length. It's just what it's supposed to be.
Okay, there we go. There's Stephen King and his take on the short story. And before we get into the interview with Brandon, I'd like to mention that you can give us a call, but not during the interview. The interview, once again, was pre-recorded back in August, and you can call in the last 15 minutes. We normally do a segment there called the last chapter, no, the final chapter, and Lou and I will bring up a couple more topics for writers during that time, and we'll introduce the next author during that segment. So if you'd like to call us in the last 15 minutes after the interview with Brandon, you can do that at 1-877-878-1436. That's our toll-free number, or you can call us on the other line at 1-626-213-5613, and we'll be back after the interview with Brandon Ford.
Blog Talk Radio.
The book, Decayed Etchings, is a compilation of 18 stories written by Brandon Ford. The author says that the idea for the title came to him while trying to decide on a name for a section of a website that he had just created. Scenes of a gloomy, cobweb-covered gravestone and long-abandoned cemetery surfaced in the author's mind. The name is certainly suitable for this collection. While the spirit of Halloween filling our imaginations, it isn't an exaggeration to say that this book is just what you need to sustain your thirst for the darker side of life. The author has indulged us in bringing forth these 18 stories which he has kept from his readers for years. So I have to wonder, without reading any of his other books, why keep the creepy and scary cream from rising to the top? Why wait so long? Could it be that he didn't think that these tales would meet the need for good horror fiction? Or maybe he thought some of the content to be just a little too much for the general public. While the content may be just what we need, some of the stories, as I have mentioned in my review on the Writer's Lounge blog, are quite dark and disturbing. But even so, many of these tales will get to the itch of what makes us humans tick, or at least it shines a light on some of the abhorrent behaviors, abnormalities, and oddities that live in our brains, this side of that gloomy cobweb-covered grave that the author talks about. One of the earlier stories in the book is titled The Suitor. The premise, foundation for this story rests on human psychology and the length that we will go to achieve our goal and the people that we will use in that process along the way. Brandon Ford makes very good use of description of detail in both the environment of his characters, while simultaneously he's able to bring you into the minds of his characters, making them rich with personality and giving them life. Here's an example of this in an excerpt from The Suitor. Shane felt enraged, but at the same time empowered and invigorated. With a clenched jaw, he watched as the body was sent crashing through the table. He smirked as it landed against the cigarette-laden floor with a heavy thud. As he marched forth, Shane felt the dozens of eyes on him, felt the entire room watch in anticipation, and he liked it. He enjoyed having an audience, relish showcasing his animal-like rage, his strengths almost inhuman. As he flexed a muscled arm, he reached down, gripping his nemesis by the collar, and lifted him off from the ground. With his free hand, he balled a tight fist and sent his opponent crashing against the ground once more with a heavy blow to the jaw. The bar erupted in hoots and applause. They called his name. They egged him on. They craved more, each and every one of them. But that was it. Shane had had enough. Still, he wanted to satisfy the room full of drunken morons. Ignoring his blistered and bleeding knuckles, he summoned a mouthful of phlegm and spat, nailing his defeated rival with a dead aim. He grinned as the chaos escalated, his adoration now more prevalent. They loved him. Brandon Ford grew up in South Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where he still resides. He started writing at the approximate age of 8. He wrote dramas, comedies, essays, plays, and, of course, thrillers. There were a few things that he took pleasure in crafting more than a good old scary story. Throughout grade school as well as high school, he continued to build his portfolio with various works, mainly short stories and novellas, but a few plays here and there. A few months shy of 23, he sat down to pen his first novel, which became Crystal Bay. Arctic Wolf Publishing, a small press based in Georgia, picked the book up a few years later. Shortly thereafter, he completed Splattered Beauty, an ode to his favorite Scream Queens. In 2009, he teamed up with Alan Draven and Jessica Lynn Gardner for Creeping Shadows, a collection of 3 short novels. Ford's contribution, Merciless, was heavily inspired by a real-life kidnapping that took place in California in 2002. In March 2010, Arctic Wolf released his third novel, Payphone. Ford has also contributed works of short fiction to several anthologies. In July of 2011, he released Decayed Etchings from Black Bedsheet Books. This is his first collection of short fiction. And now I'd like to welcome to the Writer's Lounge, Brandon Ford. Brandon, you there?
I'm here. How are you doing
tonight?
I'm good. Thanks so much for having me.
Okay. And through the magic of radio, I was able to put you in a time machine and take you from August to November 14th. Did you enjoy the ride?
It was amazing.
Okay. So why don't you tell us a little bit, Brandon, about your book here, The Cade Etchings, and tell us, what it took to give birth to this book from conception to birth.
Decayed Etchings is a collection of 18 short stories. I really don't like to call it a horror collection because obviously not all the stories included are horror, but they do all contain some dark element. Some are horror, some are leaning more towards suspense. Some are even in a darkly humorous vein.
Yes.
And I think I have a bit of a twisted sense of humor. I think that's where that came from.
You know, you kind of remind me a lot of Stephen King.
Oh, get out of here.
You do. You have that, and that's a good thing. You have that that imagination that screams Stephen King, to me, anyway. It's a very unique type of writing style that you have that I really enjoyed.
Well, thank you. That's obviously a huge compliment.
And, you know, the stories that you wrote in Decayed Etchings, can you give us a few of those stories and tell us how they originated and what got you to write some of those?
Some of them were written for certain anthologies, like I'm Up Here was originally written for a collection of monster-themed stories, but that didn't end up making it to the books. But I really liked that story. I always did, and I thought it was one of my best, so I decided to put it aside and not submit it anywhere else and keep it solely for my anthology, which I never knew when was going to come out at the time. I just knew that I really wanted to put one together at some point. Sledgehammer was written last summer in an early, very early morning. It was probably about 7:30-ish. And I was woken by the sounds of my very loud neighbors. I don't want to give too much of the story away, but the story was written while I was sitting in bed listening to the sounds of a thrashing sledgehammer outside my bedroom window. It was all written, the first draft was written all in one sitting.
That's incredible.
Guilty Pleasures was my ode to Catch a Predator, obviously. It's a show that I followed religiously while it was on. I had a twisted affection for it. I couldn't get enough of it. And if there was a double shot, I was there, definitely.
Yeah, you and me both.
Yeah, so I was a big fan of that show, so I wanted to pay homage to it. Trying to think if there are any other ones in particular. Some of them were inspired by urban legends, like Cat Call, and Goodbye Elsie was inspired by an urban legend that was actually a story that was a big news article some years back in New England.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing to me that, you know, I do the same thing when I'll be sitting around trying to think of some kind of a story to write. And like you say, with the especially the sledgehammer story, where you're hearing a noise outside your window. Now, do these thoughts about the story, do they come to you automatically, or do you develop them just from the sound of the sledgehammer? Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, with that particular story, I woke up in a really, really foul mood, obviously, because I had been woken from my sleep, and I was really, really tired. And I had started out just basically lying there trying to figure out how I was ever going to be able to get back to sleep. And I decided to, instead of just doing in my own misery to use the energy to make something positive out of it, and I immediately just grabbed a legal pad and started writing. With other stories and ideas, they don't usually strike me right away. Sometimes there will just be a subject that I'm fascinated by, and I'll think about it and think about it, and it'll stay in my brain, but I'll just be thinking about it from a completely different perspective as something that I'll just want to educate myself on. And then part of me will just think, maybe I could use that element in some way in a story. And then I'll try to build a story around it that way.
Very good. And I noticed doing a little research on you on your blog, and I was very interested in how you write, that you actually take notepads, or like you say, legal pads, and use those to write, as opposed to modern day right now, a lot of people go to their computer or their laptop, but it's nice to hear that somebody is still picking up the pen to page and writing these stories down in freehand. And I think that does help in some ways, at least helped me in the past, to help the story flow, and I felt it flowing down through my brain into my arm, through it, right out the pen. And I think sometimes that's the best way to do it. And I know that with short stories, it probably works the best. Like you say, if you're sitting around and you get an idea, you scribble it down, and it takes form, and before long, it becomes a short story.
Well, I read a long time ago that computers and typewriters and all that stuff, those aren't really writing tools. Those are printing tools. The only way to write is actually to put pen to paper.
That's a good way of putting it.
And I've always found that when writing on a computer, it's just too easy. It's too free. You don't really spend, or at least I don't anyway, I don't really spend as much time as I would like to trying to find the perfect word or the perfect sentence or the perfect line of dialogue. When writing longhand, I'm more, I think, invested in it. And I've come to find that when typing up a handwritten manuscript, the editing comes much more naturally. It's much more easier for me to edit a story or even a novel when I'm typing it up from a handwritten piece.
Right, right. And there's a couple of these stories here that I read from your book that had me right on the edge of my seat. In Decayed Etchings, and also Band of Gold, that was one of my favorites. Another favorite of mine was My Sacred Slumber. You sort of challenge some of the dark and disturbing moral boundaries of storytelling in both of these, and you take us to places where some other writers wouldn't. Can you tell us the process of how you decide what to publish and what you would never put into print?
I don't know. I really haven't done too much thought on what exactly I wouldn't want to put in a story, what I would never put in a story, because I'm definitely one to never say never. I know that there are certain words and a certain language that I would never use when writing, because I noticed that a lot of horror authors are very sexually explicit and use a lot of four-letter words that I wouldn't use in prose, because I think that certain words are better used in pornography. I don't want to come off as sounding, you know, I'm all my high horse here, but
right.
I'm guilty of definitely using some four-letter words, and obviously there are some stories in Decayed Etchings that are sexually explicit, but when I use a sexual tone in a story, I'm using it for a reason. I'm not using it for filler.
And actually, in Band of Gold, referencing that story, I believe you kind of push down the sexual element of that story itself. And once again, I don't think you overdo it with your words. It's just that you seem to cross some moral boundaries that other writers wouldn't. That was the sense that I got from reading a couple of your stories. Not that I was critical of them at all. I thought it was a good thing that you wrote them, and I'm glad to hear that you don't really hold back, that you get everything down and you don't question what you're going to put out there and publish, because it's coming from your mind. And being a writer, you have to have that sense of freedom to write whatever you want to write. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, definitely.
Very good. Okay, now I've got to ask you, what kind of a kid were you growing up?
I was a normal kid, I guess. I spent a lot of time in my bedroom. I was a big horror movie fanatic. I was at my local mom and pop video store at least two or three times a week. I pretty much rented almost all of the movies in their horror section. Every time a new horror movie came out, I was down to see it, no matter what the subject was. I spent
what's
a lot
your,
of time.
What's your favorite horror movie?
I'm a big fan of Slumber Party Massacre. That's probably
okay.
My favorite series. As I was saying, I spent a lot of time writing as a kid. I had a Smith Corona typewriter, and I had a Lucite table with four legs in my basement that I used to sit banging at. I actually used to type on loose leaf paper and put them all in a binder.
Did you allow others to read them, like friends or family?
Yeah, sure. I wasn't really too much on letting family read it because I felt too awkward to let my parents read any of my stories. But I definitely let my teachers in school and close friends read them, definitely.
How about now? Would you feel comfortable letting your parents read what you've written now?
They didn't really ask my permission. They just, as soon as they see that I have a new book out, they just pick it up and start reading.
Very good. Yeah, it's got to be a little intimidating. And I wrote a memoir about a very difficult time in my life back in the early 90s. I went through 3 years of depression. And but once you complete that book, and it goes for nonfiction and fiction, but once you complete that book and you put it out there, it's like letting your child out into the world. And you never know what's going to happen after that point because you no longer have any control over it. And I found it very intimidating at first to think that it would get into the hands of somebody that I was really close to that didn't really know about me and what I've gone through. But it's the same thing with some of the fiction that authors write also, because some of these subjects are very disturbing. And of course, Sacred Slumber was one of those that I had to wonder what was going through your mind when you wrote that. Did you have a sense of did you have to develop some courage to actually write that one, or at least publish it?
I really didn't think that it was a courageous act to write or to publish it. I was obviously trying to go for a very dark theme with that one.
And it doesn't involve a child basically being molested. So
right.
It's something that, once again, a lot of people, I think, would cringe at to read. I read it, and I didn't cringe because I really enjoyed it. The other thing that I was going to mention about some of your writing and the style seems a bit odd to me, that a lot of times a lot of your stories were chopped off at the end, and I was like wanting more. I was like craving more of that story, and you kind of ended it abruptly. I'm just wondering if that's something you consciously do, or is that something that you're not really aware that you're doing? Is that a style, a special style that you write?
I like to think it's my own personal style. Yeah. As a kid, I was always very fond of those stories that got you at the very last page or the very last paragraph. There's some twist that you don't see coming that ultimately does leave you wanting more. So I guess that's what I was trying to emulate.
Okay. Well.
But I really wasn't trying to give any of the stories, like you said, a chopped off feel to it. With all of the stories in that collection, I definitely think that I said everything that I wanted to say with all of them. I don't think that I left anything out.
Right.
So ultimately, I am pleased with the way the stories turned out and with the way the book turned out.
How are the sales going, Brandon?
I actually didn't get my first sales report yet. I guess we'll have to wait and see. But yeah. I'm getting a lot of positive feedback on Twitter and Facebook. So
very good. And it's it was just announced by you that Decayed Etchings is now on Kindle, so if anybody would like to run over there and pick up a copy of Decayed Etchings, I know you're going to love it. It's a great book, and I really, really encourage you to do that. And I know Brandon would be happy that you do that, too. Brandon, I'd like to ask you, and you mentioned Facebook and other social media sites. Has it made a difference in your life as a writer? And do you think you'd be where you are today without them?
Honestly, I don't think that I would have been able to reach as many people as I reached without websites like MySpace and Facebook and Twitter. I've not only met so many avid readers through social networking websites, but I've also met and corresponded with a lot of my peers. I've made friends with a lot of different kinds of writers through social networks. So, and it definitely makes it easier to get your name out there, get yourself out there, get your work out there, make readers aware of who you are if you don't have the support and backing of a major publisher that can afford to spend thousands upon thousands of dollars and put you on a cross-country book tour and things of that nature. You know, we small press guys, we don't have that luxury, so we have to turn to social networking websites to spread the word about our books.
Yes, we do, and I know that the industry of publishing is changing, and it's not changing from their point forward. It's changing. We're sort of changing them, I think, because of the influx of writers these days and the demand to be in print, I think, has pushed them to adjust their ways in getting the product out to the readers. Can you tell us about your other books and some of your other project? I know you got quite a few of them going, plus the books that I mentioned in the introduction. Could you tell us about them?
Crystal Bay was my first novel. That's about a writer that goes to a remote town to write his first novel, and he is seduced by a beautiful young witch that wants to rob him of all his youth and virility. Splattered Beauty, which is my tribute to all my favorite horror leading ladies. It is about a fictitious screen queen that is down on her luck when her career path doesn't really take a turn that she sees coming, and she goes on a bit of a murderous rampage. Payphone is about a serial killer that uses a payphone across the street from his apartment building to lure his victims. And
which, by the way, I just purchased on Kindle. Once again, if you want to go over and get payphone, go ahead, because I was chatting with you on Facebook yesterday, and we were talking about the payphone, which is sort of obsolete today. So I found that interesting, and I will be reading that within the next couple of days.
Well, thank you very much.
And any other, did I cut you off there? You got any other books or projects that you're, that you'd like people to know about?
Well, there's Creeping Shadows, the collection that I'm in with Alan Draven and Jessica Lynn Gardner. It's a collection of three short novels. Alan's novella is a Jack the Ripper story. Mine is about the abduction of two teenage girls, and Jessica's is about the Mexican sugar skull during the Day of the Dead.
Okay. And hey, getting back to the Decayed Etchings, is there a character in any of those 18 stories that is closest to your personality? As writers, if we're good at it, we create characters that come to life and control us in the direction of the story instead of us controlling them. In Decayed Etchings, is there a story or character that troubled you or stayed in your head longer than you'd like?
It troubled me? No. Not really. I think that the story that has most of me in it is definitely Bookends, and not in the sense that you would think when reading it. Obviously, there is a lot of me in the lead character, Carter Malloy, but there's also a lot of me in his wife, and a lot of me in the reader that sends in the letter. So I put a lot of myself in that story.
I really appreciated that one. I was once again at the end of that, and I'm not going to give it away, but it surprised me, which is a good thing once again. And even like I said before, no criticism here, but when you cut off the story, it's odd because I've read other stories and other authors that have done that and it totally turned me off. Yours, for some reason, and I still can't get my head around it, but for some reason I wanted more, and I didn't care that it sort of cut off and I wanted more. It kind of made me go to the next story with a thought in my head that, geez, I hope Brandon doesn't do this to me in this story, but in some ways I'm thinking, well, I wonder how he's going to do it. If he does it, it's fine. Not all the stories were chopped off, and I hate using those words, but that's the only thing I can think of to use to explain how you ended those stories. But I found it very, very interesting, and I really, really liked it, folks. And like once again, if you want to get out there and get the Kate Etchings, go ahead and look for that. And anything else that you would like to share with us, Brandon, and our listeners? Where can our listeners reach you and your books?
Please check my blog, Sleepless Nights, at writerbrandonford.blogspot.com. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/Brandon Ford. And on Facebook at facebook.com/writerbrandonford.
Very good. Anything else you'd like to end the show with?
Try to stay scared.
There you go. We just had Halloween once again from August and put you right in the middle of November. And now I'm going to send you back to August. And I really appreciated you being on the Writer's Lounge with me today, Brandon. And we'll be talking to you hopefully in the future. And love to have you on in the future to talk about some of your other books. Would you be into doing that?
Absolutely. Thanks again for having me.
Okay, Brandon. Take care now.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, once again, that was Brandon Ford. I hope all is going well with him and his books. I know, once again, we recorded that back in August, and probably a lot has happened since that time. And I'd like to remind you, if you'd like to call in the last, 12 minutes of the program, you can give us a call toll-free at 1-877-878-1436, or a regular number would be 1-626-213-5613.
And we're waiting here for you. We'll look for the switchboard glow here if it does happen, and we'll answer the call when that does happen if you'd like to give us a call. But in the final moments of the show today, I'd like to put in a plug for somebody I mentioned who will be coming up here on our December 12th show, and her name is Roz Morris. She'll be on to talk about her book, Nail the Novel, and I was very excited to be a part of a webinar that they just produced, her and Joanna Penn, over at thecreativepenn.com. That's the creative, Penn is spelled P-E-N-N.com. And once again, it's a webinar called How to Write a Novel. And I would suggest that maybe you might want to check that out. They've already completed the first one, and I believe they have two more to go. And I really, really got a lot out of that today. So I want to thank her for that. And we'll be talking to her on December 12th. Once again, that was another pre-recorded interview that we did. So, Lou, in our final chapter here today, what I'd like to talk about a little bit about is another question that us writers should be asking ourselves. And I know one that's come up is, what do I want most to write? What do I most want to write? And I think that what we should be asking, what do I most want to communicate? I think it's a lot easier to figure out what we want to say as in opposed to what we want to write, whether it be fiction, nonfiction, or whatever. What is it that you want to communicate to the world? What is it that you're interested in? What subject matter? So I think that's important if you're a new writer and want to be a first-time author. What do you think about that?
Well, I agree. You can't be a writer without knowing what your particular genre is, for one thing. I've written poetry, fantasy, horror, whole bunch of different things, but I've always known what I was heading for, as you know, in terms of my writing and what I was trying to produce.
And who your audience is.
And who my target audience is. That's the other thing, is that you need to know, you know, are you writing children's novels? Are you writing for young adults, or are you writing for adults? I mean, my one novel, my first fantasy novel, I started out writing that as a book for young adults. But I decided that it just wasn't a good fit for me. And so I beefed it up and I changed it up a little bit, and it's now become a book for adults, no longer a young adult book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess what comes to my mind is the Harry Potter series. It kind of starts off with, a 10-year-old boy, mm-hmm. and then it matures into something that I would say that a 10-year-old probably shouldn't be watching.
The books can get darker, a lot darker.
So in that aspect, I think that the challenge is out there for a lot of us writers to decide what area we're going to write in, first of all, and then once again, what are we going to communicate and who our audience is from the beginning of the story all the way to the end of the story. I know, and I just finished a wonderful book, which we're going to have on the authors and their co-authors. They'll be on our show in February. And I was just amazed at the level that I was reading at, which was actually a middle school audience. But here I am as an adult, and I absolutely love the story. And it's a lot like Harry Potter, where you kind of imagine that you're kind of moving into an area that you really probably wouldn't like because you're grown up. But once you get involved in the storyline and the characters kind of pull you in and make you interested in them, you really can't get out of their clutches, and you stay till the end, even if it takes you from when they're 10 all the way to when they're, what was Harry, 22, 21, 22, or even older.
Well, the thing with the Harry Potter books, too, is I don't think that they were necessarily targeted at younger readers. it was a story about young kids, but if you look at the language of the actual book itself, it's definitely geared towards an older audience.
Right.
It's just a story about children, but it's not necessarily written for children.
Exactly. Okay, well, that was my thought, my final thought for the final chapter of the show today. And I know that we have coming up here on November 28th someone who you would like to do an introduction for, and it would be Chantel Boudreau.
Well, on the next show, we will be interviewing talented Canadian author and illustrator Chantel Boudreau. Chantal has written 13 novels and also a variety of short stories, among them several zombie and fantasy tales. In fact, I just recently finished reading one of her books, which is called Sheer Terror, spelled S-H-E-A-R. And yeah, you might have guessed, it's about zombie sheep.
Okay.
And it was a delightful book. It's not necessarily the greatest, you know, the loveliest story, and that, you know, we're talking about zombie sheep that eat people.
Nah.
But it's very well written. It's a really, really interesting book and very.
I'm sure one of our past authors who was on the show, Sherry Gambino, would love that.
Yes, Sherry. I'm sure Sherry would, being a writer of zombie novels herself.
Zombie sheep.
But zombie sheep, I thought that was a really interesting take on, you know, something that's been done over and over and over again. It was a unique take and a thoroughly entertaining story. So that was Sheer Terror, but the book that we'll be discussing on November 28th is her latest novel.
I thought it was Sheer Terror.
Nope. Her latest novel is Magic University.
Oh.
And Magic University is the tale of nine misfits who are wizards, or apprentice wizards.
Kind of like Harry Potter?
Well, maybe a little, but they're a little more unique in that they're not all human. But we have nine misfits vying for three apprentice positions at the prestigious Magic University. So be sure to tune in for that. I can promise you an interesting and fun interview with Chantal.
It should be fun.
Yes, it should be a lot of fun. And she's a very talented illustrator as well. She's done illustrations for her own books as well as for others. So she is a very, very talented lady. She's a mom. She's an accountant. But she writes on the weekends, and she draws on the weekends, and I can tell you she has a wealth of talent.
Very good. And then after that, of course, on December 5th, we'll have Neil Tortor. I butchered his name sometimes. Neil Tortorella. Starting your career as a freelance web designer. And once again, I've got some exciting news coming up for authors out there at the beginning of the year, and I'll get more into that as we get closer to the beginning of the year. But we're looking forward to that. And with that, Lou, I think that pretty much wraps up the show. Thank everybody out there for tuning in to the Writer's Lounge. Once again, this is our seventh show, and we're booked right up straight through March. And here in the last part of 2011, we're going to be doing a show every week. I know there's some people out there even today who suggested that we boost up our shows because, once again, we're getting very popular out there. So until then, as we normally end the show, I'd like to say to everybody, good reading and good writing.
And good night.
In the middle of the day, your faith and your fences have been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. Ah, but it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on the west. looks like it's rainbow weather. Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow. Rainbow weather.